A mission to Mars seems much more desirable than a long-term prison sentence, right? But what if I told you, actually, there isn't that much of a difference between the two? Well, let me explain.
Let me explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Hello and welcome to the Let Me Explain podcast with me, Sean Defoe. And firstly, a massive thank you to all of you who came along to the Go Loud Lounge at All Together Now last week. Our first ever live version of the podcast. Fantastic time with all the crew ranking the very best of Waterford with Niall Power, Mick Kelly and Claire Power as well. And it was amazing to see the place full, all the people chilling out. And that's not just for Let Me Explain, but for all the different shows that we had at the Go Loud Lounge over the weekend. Loads of people turning out for Off the Ball, for the Crappy Quiz Live, for our news talk shows with Kieran Cuddihy, Andrea Gilligan, Frank Rainey, and all the other podcasts of the Go Loud Network as well. So well done to all those behind the scenes in particular. They really put on a great show. It was actually just a really deadly setup. You kind of, particularly being first up as we were on the Friday, you always wonder, oh, is something going to go wrong here? Will a mic drop? Will something not work? It all ran flawlessly and they did an absolutely great job behind the scenes. And the beanbags were a big hit too, I have to say. I dare say, in fact, we were more comfy a setup there than any astronaut has ever had. And with that in mind, let's get on to this week's episode. Humans have been turning their eyes to the skies for generations beyond count, but it's only in recent decades that the idea of any of us actually living on another planet has become somewhat technologically achievable. That hasn't stopped imaginations running wild, with science fiction writers dreaming up galaxy-spanning empires before man had ever been to the moon. But one researcher who has put an awful lot of work into considering how mankind can get to Mars says we might need to take more inspiration from the prison system than sci-fi. Lucy Berthoud of the University of Bristol has been thinking for many years about how to get people to Mars. Here she is talking about the steps needed after the launch of the Perseverance Mars mission.
We tend to go through a sequence in space exploration. We tend to start with the simplest mission, which is, obviously just going into Earth orbit. But then the next one is to fly by a planet. Then after that, we tend to try and orbit around a planet. Then we want to land on the planet or the body. It might be a comet or an asteroid as well. Then we want to rove around on the planet. And then the next one, sample return. So that's definitely our that's what Perseverance is preparing for, really, the sample return mission. And then after that, it's human exploration, really. So that's when we start with our crewed missions. And then it'll be building bases, hopefully, and commercialization, because that is our ultimate goal, is for this industry to be self-sustaining and for it to be financially worthwhile for companies to be doing space travel.
Now, Perseverance was a mission which has been collecting samples on Mars, is a mission, really, I should say, because it's still going, and exploring a crater which it's believed used to contain a lake or a river, or at least shows evidence of water once being on Mars. And a lot of the breakthroughs that you might have heard about over the past few years, which have suggested that life in some form could have lived on the red planet, have come from the little rover that's going around, and a small helicopter too, which became the first man-made object to fly around and on Mars and proved it can be done, that helicopter flight is possible in the planet's atmosphere. That's now done over 70 missions, which is way more than the launch team thought they would get out of it. It is a really cool mission, with more details from the NASA Jet Propulsion Lab.
After 1,000 sunrises on Mars, here's where NASA's Perseverance rover is exploring now. A river environment, billions of years old, that tells a dynamic story of the forces that shaped it. Let's take a tour of this area and see where we'll send the rover next. Perseverance is exploring Jezero Crater, where an ancient lake and river system once existed. If microbes ever lived here, signs of them could be preserved in these rocks. About 3.5 billion years ago, a river carved a canyon through the crater rim, filling the crater with water and depositing sand and rocks that formed a delta. On Earth, the record of such an ancient river and lake would have been erased long ago. That's why sending a robotic explorer like Perseverance is so valuable. Mars is a special place that preserves a unique record of things that happened in the first billion years of the solar system.
And Mars is able to preserve those details due to having a thinner atmosphere and less geological activity, like the plates crashing, the stuff that creates earthquakes and forms mountains and all that kind of jazz. Just has less of it crashing together than we have here on Earth, and the lack of active water as well, which would have washed other evidence away. So in a way, it is like looking in to the past. And Perseverance has also been testing the conditions of the planet, temperature, radiation, climate, even creating oxygen in Mars's atmosphere, moxygen, so to speak. In other words, testing all the things that would have to be overcome for a human colony on Mars to be a possibility. But is it something we should be doing at all? Is it just an expensive vanity project for the billionaires? Or should we be looking at the moon instead, for example, which is much more reachable? You can see it there. It's definitely closer. Here's Professor Luthi Berthoud again.
Yes, that's a really good question, because it's relatively expensive to get to Mars, and we have had a lot of missions that go that failed. So why should we actually go? I think there's probably three reasons to go to Mars at this time. Firstly, the search for residual microbial life. So the search for life elsewhere on other planets. Is at a point where we have instruments that can go and have a look at the moment. So that's really exciting. I think the second thing is to test out new technologies. And we have, for example, the Ingenuity, the little drone helicopter that's on the Perseverance rover, for example, that's a new technology we're testing out. And then the third reason is probably to prepare for human exploration. Because Mars is our nearest, most habitable neighbour, if we are going to put bases on other planets, apart from the Moon, which is a kind of transit point for us, then Mars is our ultimate goal, really.
So how, you may ask, does this all relate to prisons? Well, Professor Berthoud gave a lecture in a prison and was struck by the similarities when she was talking to some of the inmates. Firstly, let's think about the journey. So you're talking about 6 to 9 months just to get to Mars. So realistically, a 2-year round trip at the least. And it is expensive to get anything that far. You're talking about a cost of at least $2,000 for every kilogram you launch. So even launching two of me to Mars would cost as much as your average 3-bed semi-D. Now, with that in mind, every single kilo being sent on the mission would have to be accounted for and very carefully thought out. Very little room for excess baggage, which means you're talking about pretty tight living quarters. In the expectation of this, recently there was an experiment done. It was carried out over a number of months on 4 volunteers, all of whom had a scientific background, separating them out from the rest of the world to simulate what the isolation would be like. And Professor Luke O'Neill gave the details of the experiment to Newstalk's Pat Kenny.
What's most interesting, they were offline for a year. Now, can you imagine being in the world we live in? You're cut away for a year.
Info.
They mocked up communication with Earth. It's a 20-minute time for a message to go from Mars to Earth and 20 minutes back. So it's a 40-minute gap, right? And they recreated that. They also could send videos, but very rare short ones because the bandwidth wouldn't allow it. So they couldn't be checking their email, say, or checking things. And they were offline. And one question is, how would someone survive offline for a year? And if you're a teenager, you'd be horrified at this prospect, I guess, you know. So again, they watched what that meant for them, you know, and that was one thing that they recreated. And they seemed to survive quite well, by the way. They didn't complain about being offline for a year, so that was interesting.
Yeah. Now, what was the biggest problem they, after this experiment ended, what did they find was the biggest problem? Yeah,
the biggest by far was they missed, it's obvious, they missed their family and friends. And so, for example, maybe one of their parents got sick and they couldn't go and visit them. Or some crisis with their friends or family. Or not being there for birthdays and special events in person. That was the number one thing they all said was the most difficult. And of course, if you sign up for it, you are going to be away for two... There's a 2-year mission anyway, in total, to go to Mars and back, you see.
Yeah.
So you will be away from people for 2 years. And that was number one, missing key events in their lives. And the second one was boredom. And that's a very interesting thing, isn't it? Like trying to relieve boredom.
Yeah.
It's a 9-month journey, probably, Pat, by the way, in total. Now, what are you going to do for 9 months? This was the question, to keep yourself occupied. And there are various ways to deal with boredom, but that became a big issue as well. The science of boredom is actually very interesting. Why do we get bored? Now, it's obvious you might get fed up doing a repetitive task. But it's not as simple as that. You can be bored doing your favourite thing sometimes. So it's kind of a psychological oddness about boredom. And these people did report regular periods of boredom. Now the commander, who was a woman, Taston is her name, she took up embroidery. And she embroidered little badges for them all. And that gave her meaning.
And there is no reason to think that when this mission reaches Mars, the living quarters would be any bigger. Why spend all that money on temporary space for a temporary mission? Now, in prisons, when you get that kind of cramped conditions, there is an added risk. Okay, you are penned up with people you don't know and you might not like in very cramped conditions, but in the case of prisoners, you're also dealing with some violent and unstable people. So at least when it comes to a Mars mission, you probably know the people you're bunking with, you will probably have worked with them in the past, particularly if the scientist going first, and hopefully they won't be dangerous psychopaths, which is a nice little barrier to have for anyone in the workplace, frankly, but particularly when you're going to be working with them in that kind of environment. But as pretty much anyone who has shared a house with anybody else, especially with your friends, will know, even your best mates can get on your nerves in close quarters. And where it is like a prison is that there's no escape. You can't go for a walk. You can't run to the shops. You stick your head out of that airlock and you're dead. You're lost to the cold vacuum of space and you're stuck around this quite small group of people. And let's not forget as well, it's actually a really noisy environment in space. The level of background noise on a space mission is roughly equivalent to standing 15 meters away from a busy motorway. So everything you do comes with a heavy background hum. And living in a cramped space, when you're mandated to do often repetitive work every day with noise all around you, total disconnection from everybody you love, and knowing one wrong move could get you killed, well, that does sound a bit more like prison, doesn't it? Professor Berthoud also says long-term space missions should learn from the food the prisons offer, and it's fair to say it's usually far from lean cuisine. In the prison she visited in the UK, they had a strict budget of £3 per prisoner from the government. Now, in space, money isn't the issue, necessarily, but freeze-dried rations are also not exactly fine dining. Food is something, it's very important to people socially. I mean, think of how happy and content you are after a lovely meal, after a nice big hearty bowl of pasta and a glass of wine, versus when you've eaten something you don't really enjoy, a meal that a relative makes that you pretend to like or you can't say you don't like. Lovely, delightful. You don't have that same nice feeling. So add that in to all the other stressors in the environment. It does have a big impact on mood, which becomes more important in close quarters to others. So all that related really just to the travel element, but what would life living on Mars itself be like? Probably not much more roomy. I mean, given how expensive it is to launch building materials from Earth to Mars, you'd have to figure out ways of using the local rock, the local terrain, to build some of your living quarters at least. Even then, things would have to be small and sustainable. In fact, you're probably looking at things being only a little more roomy than the jail cells that Pat Kenny visited in Mountjoy Prison a number of years ago. Now, in theory, a colony on Mars could pick up radio waves from Earth, and if you had a strong enough receiver, you could transmit television signals between the two planets. You probably wouldn't be able to watch live. It takes about 20 minutes for the signal to reach that far. So at best, you'd be well behind on any match or the Love Island finale, for example. But it is, in theory, doable. Another issue to contend with would be time itself. Mars, by dint of being further away, takes longer to rotate around the sun. And it also rotates slightly slower than Earth. So it has a longer day, about 40 minutes longer. Now, that's not necessarily that much on a day-to-day basis, but over a week it's about 4 hours 40 of a difference, which means Mars as an economic entity would run at very different times to Earth. Now, we deal with some of this already. You have time zones across Earth, but all of those time zones are stuck to a 24-hour clock, even if there is a time difference between, you know, Paris and New York or Hong Kong or wherever. Mars also takes about twice as long to go around the sun, meaning if two children were born on the same day, one on Mars and one on Earth, on the Earthling's 10th birthday, the Martian would be a little over 5 years old. The seasons are also twice as long, meaning a summer and autumn could pass on Earth in the same time that a Martian summer would last. And that got me thinking, is this all just going to become a bit of a commercial wasteland?
Book your summer trip to Mars now. Twice the break you'll get on Earth. Probably for twice the price. Visit the Martian Riviera today.
Not the best Mars Tourism Board advert, I'd have to say. Ultimately, prisons, like almost every other part of life, they run on a budget. Lack of space comes down really to lack of investment, and any human mission to Mars will be a commercial enterprise. It could cost hundreds of billions of euro to do this. No government on its own, I don't think at least, is going to fund an enterprise to that scale. And we have already seen the way the space exploration is going. It's not the nation-led patriotic missions of the past. They are really the playthings of billionaires. And none of those billionaires is doing this for the good of anyone but themselves. They see this as a chance to tap into commercial opportunities, to make a legacy for themselves. Even the rocket development is really to get government and NASA contracts. And maybe that's a necessary evil. But there's no reason not to think that before too long on a Mars colony, some people will effectively be living in high-tech slums. Andy Weir is the author who wrote The Martian, the book that became the film with Matt Damon. He has another book called Artemis, which I think predicts what a space colony will actually be like long-term. And he has the poor living on the moon in what amounts to drawers in their colony. Like, you know, in a morgue, when you see that kind of thing, that's effectively it. A fancy morgue drawer, because they can't afford anything better. And I think, unfortunately, that might be pretty close to the truth, given the intense amount of resources that a Mars mission would take. And I actually do really hate being cynical about this, because I loved the idea of space exploration growing up. But the reality of the billionaires having their grubby paws in it, it's kind of stomach turning, and it has taken a lot of the romanticism out of space travel for me. I think in particular that Blue Origin flight, when it was like, oh, here's Jeff Bezos's fiance and Katy Perry, and there are people who've studied their entire lives to go to space and won't get anywhere near it, and they're gone off on a jolly up to the stratosphere. It just leaves me cold. I don't get anything exciting about it. Maybe I will get excited if it ever happens, a Mars mission, if it actually realistically ever gets off the ground, but then it'll probably be led by someone like Elon Musk, who is a disgusting human being. So it's hard to know. It's hard to know what way it will go. But interestingly, I think the perspective of Lucy Berthout is worth thinking about, that we think of it as all glamour and glitz and shooting for the stars, and actually the conditions may be closer to someone who's gotten 6 years for a violent crime. Just an interesting one. That's it for this week now. Don't forget to subscribe wherever it is you're listening. Thank you for listening to the Let Me Explain podcast. I've been Sean Defoe, and I'll be back with you next week with another episode. Chat to you soon.